Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. I'm David Noble and I'm at the Institute of Education in London and delighted to welcome as today's guest John Jerram. Hello John.
Hi, how are you?
Now as we're going to the show we're going to be looking at a paper that you published recently with several other colleagues called The Socio-Economic Gradient in Children's Reading Skills and the Role of Genetics, and it was one of my piece of reading over the summer, but very, very interesting paper, and I'm sure listeners will be fascinated to find out the gist of shortly. Just to start off with, could you give us a kind of brief background to your career in education?
So I've got a PhD in statistics from the University of Southampton. When I finished that, I moved here to the Institute of Education, and since then I've been kind of pursuing a career in quantitative education analysis, focusing largely on socioeconomic inequalities, but also say international comparisons, looking at PISA, TIMSS and PIRLS, these big international databases, but also this project looking at the relationship between genes and kids' test scores.
Mm-hmm. So where did the research come from, and what was your kind of initial interest? What did you see as the kind of issues out there that warranted investigation?
I guess my interest started from the broader social mobility literature, so this idea that family background matters a lot in this country and more than in other comparable countries. And one of the explanations given for this is educational attainment. Children from advantaged family backgrounds score higher on cognitive achievement tests than children from disadvantaged family backgrounds. And so I've done a lot of work looking into this myself, and one explanation that's always put forward about why advantaged children do better on educational achievement tests is it's potentially explained by genes. They're just naturally brighter, or they've got inherited ability, inherits the right genes. And so this paper was kind of one of the first, I think, to actually kind of, okay, people are saying this, let's go out and test it and see what we find.
How did you start your research? Can you take us through maybe some of a bit more about the claims that the literature's made in previously, and then how you went about analysing, for example, the data set that is it the ALSPAC?
Yeah, the ALSPAC data. So I guess there's two extremes in the literature. The first is almost the environmentalist point of view, where family background is what matters, and that's what explains this large socioeconomic gap in children's reading test scores. It's the environment that children are brought up in. Whereas on the other extreme, you've got the people who believe it's hereditary, or the geneticists who are arguing, well, genes have a big role in explaining these socioeconomic differences. And some arguments from that particular literature, if you take some of the more extreme kind of views, is that, well, differences between family background and later lifetime outcomes, 50%, 75% of it can be explained by hereditary or genetic variation. And within the reading kind of skills literature, within the education literature, there's been claims that 50 to 75% of variation in reading test scores can be explained by genetics, which is really where we came from when thinking about this paper. The process that we went through was we had to first get access to this data, and one of the reasons why we're kind of one of the first people to look into this topic is that the data's very, very difficult to get hold of. We had to put through a very lengthy proposal. It took us about a year to actually get the data. When we got it, it was kind of jump for joy that we've actually managed to get the data. But then we kind of came up against the problem of having to analyse it, understanding what exactly the genetic information kind of is, how it's coded. Once we'd kind of figured that out with our kind of genetic colleagues who are on the paper with us, we kind of went through various statistical modelling techniques, regression analysis, to try and pass out, okay, how much of the variation between socioeconomic groups can these genes, these three particular genes, explain?
So can you say more about the ASPAC data set? I mean, yep. Scottish listeners might have some kind of awareness of similar, in a sense, data sets that exist in that part of the UK. And also, I get the sense that maybe you weren't altogether delighted with what you found within there as far as its usefulness goes.
Right, so I'll take the first of those points first about the ASPEC data set. So this was data collection that began in the early 1990s in the old Avon district of the UK in southwest England. It initially sampled about 12,000 pregnant women, and it's followed the women and their children very regularly throughout their life up to now when they're aged about 20. And so it's got very detailed information on both on children's family background, the environment they grew up in, but also children's educational attainment, and also this genetic information's being collected as well. One of the particularly interesting features is we've got test scores at 7, 8 and 9 in reading, spelling, their key stage English exam. So a lot of kind of detailed information there. Coming on to the second point, where you said we weren't delighted in what we found. I don't know if that's the way I would put it. I think we started to realise once we get into the paper what we'd actually be able to say from doing this study is limited, simply because we've considered three genes here and kind of almost specific parts of these three genes. We can take that into account, and we see they don't really explain much of the socioeconomic gap. But the argument really is it's probably not just these three genes. It's probably hundreds of these genes all working together and interacting with the environment. And what you'd really want to do is take into account, say, several hundred genes rather than just the three we've done. So although we've taken it forward by trying to account for genetic differences, we realise we're only kind of partially done that. We're only partially of the way there, and actually you'd want to control for several hundred of these things rather than just the three we've been able to in this particular study.
So you've touched on your conclusions there. Is there other aspects to your conclusions, and what kind of implications do you think it has? I think it opens up a whole new area of research in the future.
Yeah, so our first main conclusion was that the link between these particular genes and children's test scores doesn't seem to be particularly strong. There's been other studies done by geneticists that were picked up quite prominently actually by the BBC saying, well, okay, this is the dyslexia gene, was the BBC headline. The academic studies didn't go quite that far, but they were suggesting, look, these genes are strongly predictive of children's test scores. Our study really kind of has gone into look at that in more detail and showed, look, the association isn't particularly strong there. These three genes don't seem to be that well linked to children's test scores. The second conclusion is that these three genes by themselves can't explain the socioeconomic, much of the socioeconomic gap. It's about 2% that they can explain. But like I said, really you wouldn't just be controlling for these three genes, you'd be taking into account a whole wide range, possibly several hundreds of genes, so that's still an open question. And the third conclusion we reached is, well, some people have ventured the argument that there might be gene-environment interactions. So it's not the idea of it's nature versus nurture, but the impact of nature depends on the environment that children are exposed to. We didn't find any evidence of that in this particular study, but again, our ability to find such interactions was limited because of the data we had available.
And I take it that there's quite a lot of literature on the kind of gene by environment interaction. Is that when we're getting into kind of realms of the way that home's set up and the relationship between the child and the parent and number of books in the house and things like that? Is that?
Yeah, so that's what we kind of mean by gene environment interactions, that it could be that a child has a particular gene, but that needs to be stimulated by the right environment, which could be books of the home, parents reading to the child. We've proxied that by just using parental education level. We've done our research with various robustness tests looking for other kind of measures of the environment and still didn't find anything particularly striking or conclusive. But like I said, it's an open question. There is research out there claiming to find such interactions. A lot of the time, these interactions haven't been replicated in other data sets. So I think from the genetic literature point of view, there's some scepticism about the strength of the evidence that these relationships or these types of interactions really do hold. And I think that's where the research field is going to start moving in the future, is trying to kind of nail down which genes do interact with the environment, if there can be some that's found to be stable.
So are you aware of other kind of similar research projects that are ongoing at the moment? I mean, do we need hundreds more similar studies into other genes, or does the Human Genome Project, is that, in what ways might that help?
I think, so I'm a social scientist or an educationalist, and I think there are limits to what we can do on our side at the moment. To take this literature forward, I guess we need more from the geneticist point of view in identifying robustly which genes are important to which particular outcomes, and in this particular instance, children's reading test scores. I am aware of other kind of studies, not in this particular area, but in other kind of elements of children's educational attainment, but I think they're ongoing still as well. So the Human Genome Project is 10 to 15 years old at the moment, and perhaps people are expecting a little bit too much too quickly from the social science environment, nature versus nurture argument. But I do think over the next kind of decade or two, we are going to be able to push this forward to get some interesting findings.
Mm-hmm. What kind of response have you had to the paper from other academics and maybe policymakers within government authorities?
I guess we've had a mixed reaction. So whenever you kind of put out a study like this, there's always kind of two sides that you're facing off against. There's people who are from the environmentalist side who are kind of saying, oh yes, look, well, that's obvious, we've been telling you for ages that it's the environment, it's not the genetics. Whereas there's people on the other side who we sent our study to and commented on this, saying, oh yes, but you've only controlled for a few genes, this doesn't prove anything. And in some ways it's kind of a halfway house what we actually found between the two. From what we can see with these three genes, genetics isn't doing a lot here, but like I said, we're only doing these three genes and not the potentially hundreds that are important. So the reaction you kind of get is people often tending to back up or argue their prior point of view, and I think our evidence is kind of lay somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm. And just finally, John, for the classroom teacher, what are the kind of key messages that we should take away from this paper? Or is it just a case of keeping an eye on what comes next? Or maybe would you encourage teachers to read a bit more widely around the competing arguments, or just the field, or the various fields in general?
I think in the short term, teachers should be aware of this literature and what's going on in kind of the educational research community. I don't think there's any immediate implications for classroom practice per se, simply because I don't think the literature and the evidence is far advanced enough yet. At the same time, I do think keeping an awareness is important, because potentially 10, 15 years' time, this could become incredibly important. We know in medicine that there's talk about, okay, people having genetic susceptibility to certain diseases, and there might be specialist treatments that could be targeted at particular individuals. Well, just say if we did find particular genes or genetic combinations that meant children had a susceptibility to, say, reading disorders, perhaps dyslexia, then that could be incredibly useful information to target practices more effectively at certain individuals to help them achieve better. I'm not saying that's anywhere kind of near happening in the near future, but it's an exciting possibility that maybe kind of come about in 20, 30 years' time. Who knows? It depends how fast we can push things forward.
John, thanks very much for taking time out to appear on Radio Edutalk, and best wishes for the future.
Brilliant, thank you.